Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. The presidential election is in just 98 days. The outcome will determine the future of the climate crisis, not just here in the United States, but also around the globe. Earlier this month, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres called on countries to fight the disease of the world's addiction to coal, oil, and gas, warning that heat records must spur rich nations to lead the way in phasing out fossil fuels. According to a recent Guardian investigation, fresh oil and gas exploration this year threatens to unleash nearly 12 billion tons of planet-heating gases around the annual emissions of China over the lifetime of the new drilling projects. Wealthy countries like the United States and the United Kingdom, with a low economic dependence on fossil fuels, have led this charge, handing out a record 825 oil and gas licenses last year. On today's show, we will find out what we can expect from a Harris administration beyond the continuation of President Biden's climate policies. Donald Trump recently met with oil executives, asking them for $1 billion. In return, he vowed to end Biden's climate policies and continue drilling for oil and gas. The Washington Post was the first to report on this meeting. Joining us to talk about what is at stake are two guests. Rebecca Lieber is an award-winning journalist and investigative researcher at the Center for Climate Integrity, a nonprofit whose mission is to empower communities and elected officials with the knowledge and tools they need to hold oil and gas corporations accountable for decades of lying about climate change. Rebecca Lieber serves on the board of directors for the Society of Environmental Journalists. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Hi, it's great to be back. Thank you.
Hi, it's great to have you. Marianne Lavelle is an award-winning reporter with Inside Climate News, a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit news organization dedicated to covering climate change, energy, and the environment. Marianne Lavelle has covered the environment, science, law, and business in Washington, D.C. for more than two decades. Hi, Marianne. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
Well, it's great to have both of you. I just want to talk about a couple of things that are happening right now. I mean, the horrific fire in Northern California, again, it's right by Paradise. That is just horrible. There's horrific fires in Canada. The Washington Post just reported that by the start of next month, high temperatures in the 90s or greater will extend from coast to coast. We've got multiple days of record-setting heat from 105 to 110. We saw very high temperatures in the Central Valley. We're going to see that in the Texas Panhandle, parts of Oklahoma and Kansas. I mean, we could spend an hour just talking about all of this. I wonder what your thoughts are about media coverage of all of this and the connection to the presidential election. Rebecca, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think media coverage on extreme weather and connecting the dots to climate change have really improved over the years. I think a decade ago, we were in a really different place in talking about those connections. There's always been this gap, though, when connecting this to political coverage. I think every journalist could do a better job getting candidates on the record about their climate positions, what they intend to do on it. And also, particularly when it comes to Republicans, getting them on the record on climate denial. But we do see how extreme weather can play a really important role in elections. It certainly has in past presidential elections, even if it's not always framed as a climate issue. These disasters keep getting worse, and that it plays a huge role in the political rhetoric. I think we're seeing more of that coverage happen, but it could always improve.
Marianne, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Rebecca is right that the gap is with the political coverage, and really asking the questions of the candidates with awareness that we're in a crisis, and a crisis that is, as you pointed out, is ever more visible. When former President Donald Trump starts talking about the liquid gold underneath our feet, that's how he refers to oil and his plans to drill for more of it, he isn't really taken to task and ask, well, how do you reconcile that with the planetary crisis that we're facing? And also, he often will get away with making statements like, oh, I care about clean air and clean water, but his policies showed anything but being sensitive to the connections among all of these environmental issues, particularly climate change.
Marianne, why do you think this is the case? I mean, media outlets have gotten so much better across the board on this reporting around climate change. I mean, the New York Times on July 17th had a story. This is what a headline. We mapped heat in three U.S. cities. Some sidewalks were over 130 degrees. Yeah, I'm sure amazing. A lot of people remember the horrific stories about Phoenix, where if homeless people walked on the sidewalk without shoes and socks, they would get horrific burns. And just in the last month, we've heard stories about people dying in Phoenix because of heat. Now, in this New York Times story, it's a great story, but there's not one mention of what would happen under a, well, I guess this was July 17th. This was before Biden dropped out, I believe, but not one mention of politics. And I hear that a lot on NPR. They have some great, really good climate pieces, but they rarely talk about the politics. I mean, it's the meeting with Trump, just quickly, the meeting that Trump had with these oil execs, I feel like this should be in every single story we now hear about climate. And then, of course, you can also talk about what Biden has done and has not done.
Right. NPR, The New York Times, you can go down the list. A lot of the major media organizations have really great climate reporters and really great coverage of climate and looking at it in many different ways. But the reporters who are out there covering the campaign trail, they are not climate reporters, and they've never really, considered this part of their portfolio. And this is a problem with political coverage across the board, that it's more of horse race coverage than really looking at the stakes of what electing this candidate will mean, and it's really obvious to us because we're so immersed in climate that this is something that we have to make that connection totally. And that's what one of the things we try at Inside Climate News with our political coverage is just completely immersed in the stakes for climate change.
Rebecca, what do you think it will take to change this, given that so much is at stake in this upcoming election?
So yeah, first of all, I want to give a shout out to Inside Climate News. I agree. It's an incredible resource of an outlet that's doing it all when it comes to covering the climate crisis. In terms of media coverage of climate and the election, what I would love to see more of is the actual stakes here, and not just talking about the future of our planet at stake, but what a Trump presidency could actually mean or would actually mean for climate change. I see a lot of coverage looking at previously when Biden was still in the race, his liabilities among young voters on his climate record. And those are valid points. But I see far less on the actual policies that a Trump administration would enact on climate. So there can be sometimes this false equivalence that it doesn't really matter. But when you look at an entire administration and how it can be aligned in addressing climate change and I guess kind of shepherding things in generally the correct direction versus throwing up roadblocks at every point and promoting fossil fuels and climate denial as official policy, I think just getting those stakes into our everyday stories is really important, because I think that's overlooked when we're talking about the actual political horse race. So I would love just a lot more attention paid to what Trump would mean for climate.
Well, if you'd like to join us today, we're talking about the outcome of the presidential election and how it will determine the future of the climate crisis around the globe. What are your thoughts on media coverage of these issues? And then if you'd like to talk about what you think is at stake and what deserves more attention, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today we're joined by Rebecca Lieber, an investigative researcher at the Center for Climate Integrity. Marianne Lavelle is a reporter with Inside Climate News. Marianne, can you talk to us about what is at stake in the upcoming election? I always think about this fact. Climate scientists say we must cut global carbon emissions in half by the year 2030 and zero by the year 2040. So can you talk about just how important this upcoming election is when it comes to taking action on the climate crisis?
Well, of course, the timing is we're out of time. We're way behind on where we need to be in reducing emissions on that kind of trajectory. What is at stake is that the Trump, a new Trump administration would not feel the cutting carbon emissions on that, on anything like that trajectory is really, anything that is going to devote any resources to. I mean, we can look at some of the specifics that we know Trump's allies have put out of what they how they like to change policy. But the writ large policy that we can count on is that it would be a policy of bringing down any remaining barriers on fossil fuel production. And interestingly, I think, you know, in my reporting on this, I've talked to different folks who are allies of Trump and who were in his administration, and they're not going to be talking about, climate change is a hoax. They're not going to be actually articulating that they don't believe in climate change. What they're going to do is talk about how, well, climate is an issue, but it's not bigger than other environmental issues. Or what they're going to try to do is say, we care about climate change, but we're not alarmist about it. And that's the kind of rhetoric that people who are getting ready to vote really have to be aware of and really probe more deeply beneath what's being said, because on the surface it can look like they're not uncaring about climate change, but when you look at what their actual plans are, it's could be very, very devastating for the planet.
Rebecca, can you talk about how important this election is and what's at stake?
Yeah, so digging in here, I think one thing that's at stake is when you look at Trump's record in reversing regulations on climate in his term, he wasn't that effective. A lot of this was ultimately reversed in court. So the worry is, as Marianne talked about with his allies laying out this plan for a 2.0 roadmap, is that he could be a lot more effective this time. We don't know exactly how this would play out, but one major issue at stake is that he would be a lot potentially smarter on undoing what Biden has put in place in terms of climate regulatory policy. Another piece of this is how the Biden administration has, through Congress, the authority to push out over $1 trillion in funding devoted to clean energy and climate programs. A lot of this funding hasn't been formally appropriated yet, so it is still a works in progress. And what you would have if Trump came in here is he would have a lot of power in deciding where this funding goes, how we even define clean energy. There are a lot of ways a Trump administration could really obstruct funding that is meant to go to boosting climate action and using it instead to boost fossil fuels. Those are two major ways that Trump could reverse progress on climate change. But there's also all of the potential of what we could do, could be done on climate that would be missing, where Trump would be reversing policies while I assume we'll talk about Harris in a little bit, so I'm getting a bit ahead of myself, but sticking to what Trump could do, I think on regulations and government appropriations, there's a lot at stake here.
Go ahead, Marianne.
I was just going to, Rebecca's really good points she made, I wanted to add to them. One of the reasons that Trump could be more effective this time is, remember, he appointed three members of the Supreme Court, and that was accomplished right at the end of his administration. And only now we're seeing the impact that that has had on climate and environment. And what it's turning out to do is make it very more difficult for the Biden administration to get climate policy into effect. And that is one of the reasons Trump could be much more effective this time. It's because he has, he will have the Supreme Court at his back, and they have the final word on whether these regulatory rollbacks stay in place.
Let's stick with this for a minute, Marianne, because you wrote a piece about this, and we did a show about the Chevron doctrine. On June 28th, the conservatives on the court overturned this 40-year-old legal precedent. By dismissing the so-called Chevron doctrine, the court handed a legal victory to those challenging aspects of President Biden's climate agenda. And you write that the 6-justice conservative majority swept away this doctrine and ruled that judges should not give deference to federal agency interpretations of the law. The result, which conservative activists have sought for years, gives an advantage to businesses and Republican-led states that are challenging most of Biden's environmental initiatives, including every one of his climate-focused regulations. So tell us more about this.
Right. Well, this, as you said, this is something the right wing has sought for, you know, 40 years almost, to make it more difficult for the federal agencies to regulate and for their regulations to hold up. And what the court said is that they're not going to rely on agency expertise, or it really kind of dismisses the scientific expertise that the agencies have in these policy issues, and says it's really judges who should decide what the law is. And the chances are greater that these decisions are going to be made on an ideological basis rather than, based on what the agencies kind of lay out as the best science and the best technology to meet those standards. Just one example that is a very live controversy in the courts is the standards that are supposed to accelerate adoption of electric vehicles. These are standards to reduce pollution from passenger vehicles and from heavy trucks. And what the agencies, the experts have determined is, hey, the technology is there. The electric vehicle technology is viable. Transition is within reach. And what the oil industry already is arguing is that this is a de facto ban on gasoline-powered vehicles. And this is something that the federal agencies have no authority to do. And now it's going to be up to judges and ultimately the Supreme Court to decide who is right on that interpretation.
So, Rebecca, tell us what that means if, say, for example, Kamala Harris wins in November, and let's say she passes very strong climate legislation, like some of the legislation we saw in the original version of Build Back Better. What could then happen because of the overturning of the Chevron doctrine?
Yeah, assuming that if Congress passed legislation on climate, there, even if they're writing into law climate policy, which we saw in the Biden administration, there's often a lot of deference given to agencies in how to implement. So taking the Biden administration here, the IRS has had some leeway in how to interpret and set the rules that Congress set out when it comes to defining what would apply for hydrogen tax credits and what is clean energy. There is some leeway here, and you see this all the time with EPA environmental policy, that the Clean Air Act has the broad strokes of what the EPA should do, but there's so much more in the details. So the Chevron doctrine and the Supreme Court decision really changes the game here, and I think we don't fully know how this will play out, but either Congress might have to be a lot more prescriptive with how it writes policy to withstand the scrutiny of courts, or you have courts playing that more politicized role in trying to interpret climate science and areas that law clerks are not and judges are not the experts in. It's the agency staff. So it's this is new terrain that we haven't seen before. So I think it really creates more obstacles for if Kamala Harris is elected, for how a Democratic administration could push the needle on climate. I think it's a lot that we don't have answers to just yet, but it's likely going to be harder.
Are you hearing, Rebecca, from organizations like the NRDC, Food and Water Watch, all of these groups that do 350.org, these groups that do work on this issue? What are you hearing from them about how they are going to deal with the Chevron case?
I might get Marianne's take on this because I think she'd be better suited to answer that.
Marianne?
NRDC, they exist to litigate an environmental defense fund. That's another environmental group, in many ways, Sierra Club too. Some of the huge environmental policy successes of the last 50 years are due to the litigation that these groups do. And I believe that they are going to just continue to find ways to continue this fight. They're not they're not going to put down arms at all and give up. I think that you almost have to look at this in like the civil rights battle. This is a long-term battle. And of course, there has been this enormous backlash, in many ways driven by the fossil fuel industry, to the progress that's been made. And in many ways, the Donald Trump administration was a fruit of this backlash. And we have to, kind of look at this as a long-term fight, much like the Supreme Court reversal of Roe v. Wade. The abortion battle is now being played out. We don't even know all of the impacts that the reversal of Roe v. Wade is going to have, and it's not always going to be clear. I know this decision was just made in Iowa to restrict abortion, and yet nearly next door in Kansas, they made the opposite decision. So the abortion battle is being fought state by state by state, and I believe the climate battle is going to continue to be fought issue by issue by issue.
We're going to take a quick break. That is Marianne Lavelle, an award-winning reporter with Inside Climate News, a Pulitzer Prize-winning nonprofit news organization dedicated to covering climate change, energy, and the environment. Rebecca Lieber is an award-winning journalist and investigative researcher at the Center for Climate Integrity, a nonprofit whose mission is to empower communities and elected officials with the knowledge and tools they need to hold oil and gas corporations accountable for decades of lying about climate change. The election is in just 98 days. The outcome will determine the future of the climate crisis here in the U.S. and around the globe. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll discuss the state of abortion in the United States after Donald Trump's Supreme Court picks overturned Roe. Many in the media are running with Trump's line that he does not support a national ban and that the states will decide. But if all 50 states were controlled by Republicans, we would most likely have a national ban. Like Marianne just said, a six-week ban just went into effect in Iowa. So we hope you can join us for that show. And then on Wednesday, we will continue our series on Project 2025. Thursday, we will talk about the Supreme Court's homeless encampment decision. California Governor Gavin Newsom just issued orders for the removal of camps across the state. We hope you can join us for those shows. If you have a guest idea or a topic idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. If you'd like to listen to our past shows or sign up for our podcast, you can go to kalw.org, click on news, and then Your Call. I also just wanted to mention there was a really important piece by Sam Stein in The Bulwark about all of these scams that people are getting from what sounds like the Harris campaign. I'm getting so many more texts asking for money, and a lot of these texts are actual scams. So just be careful about sending money or sharing your personal information. If you get a text saying, Kamala Harris can win the election if you send us $5. So many of these texts are scams. So just be sure you double check before sharing private information or sending any money. Today, we are talking about what is at stake when it comes to the presidential election and the future of the climate crisis. We're joined by Rebecca Lieber, investigative researcher at the Center for Climate Integrity. Marianne Lavelle is a reporter for Inside Climate News. You can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Let's hear from Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Thanks for holding.
Hello. I've got a couple points I want to make, if I can. One is, I'm not sure what good it does to bemoan the fact that the mass media in this country have done a pathetic job about covering global warming and how this is impacting our lives. So, I mean, between now and the election, you've got 4 months. I don't expect to see a miracle on the part of the mass media. But there are only one set of institutions that have failed. The government has failed in this. So have our educational institutions. So there's a failure across the board to try and make this important and significant to enough people. But the real question I want to ask your guests is, do they see people in their course of, you know, just everyday lives and their reporting, do they see a significant number of people now starting to see the connection between the kind of extreme weather events that are occurring and global warming and climate change and global emissions? I'm wondering if there is really some movement that they see where significant numbers of people are starting to make that connection.
This is a great question. Thank you, Greg. According to the Yale Program on Climate Change Communication, this was from April of this year, 37% of voters consider climate change to be very important. Rebecca, what strikes you about this? Are you seeing a shift given everything that's happening, hurricanes, wildfires, floods?
Yeah, I think there has been a shift, and there is some polling showing that people are connecting the dots. I think some of that is because media coverage has been doing a better job connecting the dots and just better education. Another thing that I think has been shifting is your average person connecting the dots between the climate change and the fossil fuel industry. So I would add that to your caller's list of who's to blame, that the fossil fuel industry has played a really pivotal role in promoting the narratives that we have today of greenwashing, and that it's individuals that are responsible, just ride a bike and recycle. These are lies that have come from the oil and gas industry itself. So I think we've also seen some growth from the public in recognizing the fossil fuel industry's role in this deception. I think there's still a long way to go there, but overall, the more coverage, the more discussion, and honestly, the more politicians are pointing out these connections, I think that goes a long way in educating people.
What would you add, Marianne?
Yeah, I had the opportunity to be traveling a lot over the last year, including to red states and, let's see, Indiana and Alabama. And what I found was not a lot of people like really denying that climate change is happening and really seeing the connection with what they're seeing in their communities, the natural disasters and the damage to forests and that sort of thing. I have a colleague in Alabama who's been writing about explosions from old coal mining operations, and people really do make that connection. I think that the problem is that the Republicans have been very effective in arguing that the steps that the government is taking, these first steps to really reduce emissions, is going to hurt ordinary folks economically. And you hear Donald Trump say this on the campaign trail all the time. He says electric vehicles are going to put auto workers out of work, when the reality is that this incredible investment in clean auto technology is creating jobs all around the country, including in many of the red states. And I think people in those states are beginning to see those jobs and everything. I think what, and this kind of comes back to Harris and the job that she has to really convey to folks that they're are real benefits to making the kind of investments that we're making in addressing climate change, because it has to be more it can't just be about saving the ecosystems and the trees. It has to be, it has to make that connection to real people's lives as well.
Since you brought up Vice President Harris, let's talk about this for a minute. Rebecca, you interviewed Vice President Kamala Harris in 2019 when she was a presidential candidate, and she told you that the Department of Justice should absolutely investigate the fossil fuel industry for creating incredible harm in our communities. She says it's about having the conviction to take these guys to court and to hold them accountable and not back down. So tell us more about this, and what do you think we should expect from a Harris administration if she wins in November?
Yeah, so the context of this interview was interesting. She was running in the primary. If you remember back then, Democrats were trying to outposition each other on climate change, and it was the first time we really saw Democratic candidates trying to outflank each other with more aggressive climate policies. So Harris was in the race at the time, and she really leaned into her record as a attorney general for California, and that she would take a really aggressive stance when it comes to climate change and holding polluters accountable. She, and frequent talking point was how she investigated ExxonMobil and its deception around the impacts of climate change on its business to shareholders and the public. So at the time, she was talking about how she would direct parts of the government to investigate the industry and uncover what actually happened here and their deception. So the Department of Justice could play a really interesting role in investigating the industry. We saw this years ago with tobacco, that all of the lawsuits and settlements came out of investigations from the federal government. What I would love to hear now is more people getting her on the record about this stance, because when we're looking at places a Harris administration could go compared to Biden, we haven't seen his administration take a clear stance on the role of the DOJ in investigating companies. So with Harris having said that she would do this, she would absolutely pursue this in the past. That is one area her administration could do more on climate than where we've seen Biden go.
What would you add, Marianne? Are you planning to do any deep dives into what a Kamala Harris administration would do on these issues?
Absolutely. We are working on that now, and really trying to get a sense of where she might differ from President Biden, and where she might be able to go further. And I know that in the community of young voters, we've been doing a lot of talking to young activists, and there's really a lot of enthusiasm since the big switch from Biden to Harris. And Harris, one of the things that she was very involved in was funding for community climate solutions. She kind of spearheaded that effort for the Biden administration, and she also spearheaded raising money for international solution climate solutions. And she did a tour of Africa, for instance. So she personally was involved in this money raising for that effort. And that is so important for reestablishing U.S. credibility on the international scene. So I believe that there are going to be a lot of distinctions. And I think, like Rebecca said, though, We really need the opportunity to get Kamala Harris on the record now. What does she see as the Justice Department's role? And what would she do beyond what has already been done in the Inflation Reduction Act and with this first round of EPA regulations on climate? Where do we have to go further on climate? Because the science says we have a lot more that we should be doing.
Rebecca, do you have any sense of what's happening with fracking? In one of her last moves before leaving the legal office, Harris successfully sued the Obama administration over a plan to allow fracking off the Pacific coast. In 2019, she said, "There's no question I'm in favor of banning fracking." Politico had a piece yesterday that said Kamala Harris's campaign pledged that she would not ban fracking. A campaign spokesperson said in a follow-up email to Politico that she would not ban fracking. So do you know what's going on here?
Well, I don't have more clarity than that Politico piece, but on where things are currently with the campaign. But to set up some context here, fracking and basically the expansion of oil and gas drilling and infrastructure has been a really big tension in the Biden administration, because if we remember, Biden had implemented a pause of new permitting, which then there was a lot of court scrutiny over. So the administration changed course. And since then, we've actually seen areas where his administration has approved vast new drilling and permits for the industry, including Alaska's Willow Project comes to mind. So it doesn't quite surprise me that where things are unclear with how with Harris's campaign on this, that this is a tense point. It's certainly something that Republicans have tried to use to attack Democrats over. But I think when we're talking about where a future administration could go on climate, it's really the aggressive stance on fossil fuel industries, both its lies, but also its expansion of infrastructure at a time we know we can't afford more fossil fuels. Those are some of the major areas that that we haven't, we could see more aggression on. Harris has signaled that in the past, but the political context has changed.
Well, thanks again for the call, Greg. Let's go to Eliza in Berkeley. Hi, Eliza. Thank you for holding. Is Eliza still with us? Did Eliza drop? Well, Eliza, thank you so much for your important question. Eliza wanted to know how the candidates stand on the oceans. This is so important. Axios just had a piece. Nearly all of the world's oceans are in the midst of unusual warmth, warns a leading NOAA scientist, who notes that this has contributed to the extreme heat baking much of the northern hemisphere this summer. Even small rises in temperatures can disrupt marine ecosystems, which cause some species to relocate and increase disease risks. And we know, we've done a lot of shows about how this is affecting coral reefs around the globe. So have either of you looked into this, where the candidates stand on oceans, Rebecca?
It's a really important question. I haven't looked at this in detail. I do think oceans isn't always center of the narrative, and it is such an important issue. We are seeing some movement on in plastics world, which certainly has a lot of overlap with oceans, but I haven't looked at the candidate positions in detail.
Have you, Marianne?
Absolutely. This is something that the candidates haven't focused as much on. But the thing that really catches people's attention about Harris's background on this is that she, when she was Attorney General in California, she joined with the local prosecutors to bring criminal charges against the operators of an oil pipeline that polluted California's beaches. And she really made a very strong statement at the time that oceans are just a big part of life in California. Anyone who violates the law and endangers our oceans is going to be held accountable. Of course, the damage that's happening to the oceans that is now so profound is that they are really absorbing the vast majority of heat and the vast majority of carbon. And it's having a huge impact on wildlife and really the future of the oceans. And again, we need to hear from Kamala Harris about what she thinks about holding holding fossil fuel industry responsible for the damage that's going on in our oceans right now. It's perhaps not as visible as oil spills, but the carbon and heat overload in the oceans is having a very profound impact.
Well, this is again, thank you for the question. There's not much online. I did find this article from Environment Science Policy Advisors. This is a political consulting firm focused on ocean and coastal issues. They've got a fairly long piece about Kamala Harris. They say that she, as district attorney, created an environmental justice office, supported California's initiatives to reduce vehicle pollution and oppose drilling on public lands. She later became an original co-sponsor of the Green New Deal. But what is on her record when it comes to the ocean? She sponsored a variety of bills related to ocean coasts, ecosystems, and science. These included the Living Shorelines Act, the Water for Tomorrow Act. I mean, there's a lot of things that she actually co-sponsored. We don't have time to go into all of this, but we should definitely do a show about this. And then, of course, on the Trump side, it's important to remember that Project 2025 says that NOAA, the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, should be dismantled and many of its functions eliminated or privatized. So it's important to note that. I also just wanted to, I sort of criticized the New York Times earlier for not including the politics in the piece about how in three cities, sidewalks were over 130 degrees. Since then, I have found a good piece called What Trump 2.0 Could Mean for the Environment. And this goes to what you both have been saying. This piece says that if he retakes the White House, he would be in a much better position to dismantle environmental and climate rules. Myron Ebell, who led the transition at the EPA after Trump won in 2016, said, it's going to be easier. They're going to have better people, more committed people, more experienced people. They will be able to move more quickly and more successfully. I think that's a really key point, Rebecca, because Trump says that he's going to get rid of, well, Project 2025 says the plan is to get rid of over 50,000 civil servants and replace them with MAGA loyalists. So it's a really important point. I mean, this would have profound impacts on climate policy. And Rebecca, we have about a minute left.
Yeah, I mean, I think that gets at the stake that it's really the dismantling of the government that poses a big risk here, and also at the judicial appointment level, that has huge stakes for climate. So that doesn't only affect climate, but a Trump administration really does would not just set us back a little bit, but it could really reverse a lot that we've seen in terms of climate solutions advancing.
Rebecca, as your new job as investigative researcher at the Center for Climate Integrity, congratulations, by the way. What are you doing in this role to bring these issues to light? Are you taking any more deep dives into what we can expect from a Trump and Harris administration?
Yeah, thanks for asking. My role is documenting the fossil fuel industry's role in obstructing climate action and really digging deep in investigative research, looking at it's the oil and gas industry and its deception over climate change. So that certainly ties into politics. That's a big part of that narrative, how the oil and gas industry has really leveraged ties with Republicans and Democrats on obstructing climate action, and excited to dig in more on that.
Well, thank you. And you can find more about Rebecca's work with the Center for Climate Integrity at our website, kalw.org. Click on news and then your call. Final thoughts from you, Marianne? We have about a minute left.
Yeah, I mean, just because Rebecca mentioned the great work that they're doing on accountability, I think it's important for people to take a look at the role that the fossil fuel industry is having in this election. They've already donated $110 million, I think it is, to candidates. They are running anti-electric vehicle ads in swing states, trying to paint the Democrats as people who want to ban your cars, that sort of thing. I think it's really worth folks looking not only at the candidates, but who is supporting the candidates.
Marianne Lavelle is an award-winning reporter for Inside Climate News. Rebecca Lieber is an award-winning journalist and investigative researcher at the Center for Climate Integrity. Thank you both for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.